This has been the year of Zoom. There have been so many Zoom meetings. Everybody's connecting virtually, and they have all these Zoom meetings. And people say, you know, good and bad about it. The other day, I was on a Zoom meeting, and someone else was presenting, and you could see all the little icons, all the pictures of all the different people there. And then the person said, okay, here's Darren now, and turned it over to me. And I started presenting, and literally, I could see people getting up and walking away. Like, well, hello, I'm in the middle of doing something right now. I can see you there. Or actually, I can see that you're not there. And literally people, I mean, like my boss, when he was presenting, like everyone's listening, they all, and like I start and literally not everybody, but it was enough that it was distracting for me that people were just getting off and leaving and going, making a sandwich or something like that, or taking the dog for a walk. Why isn't anybody watching? I'm thinking this is crazy. But if that's ever happened to you, or if you fear that's happening to you, or if you've been on the other side where you've gotten up and walked away, wait till you see what is coming your way, what is about to visit possibly every Zoom meeting you will ever be in. I'm Darren, everyone.
And I'm Jeff. Welcome to the Voice Box. Today, our guest is Beth Porter from Riff Analytics. Beth, it's great to have you here. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, Beth, now tell me this. What's going to happen? What's going to change? You guys with Riff Analytics, I don't want to say you're like a fly on the wall in a Zoom meeting, but you're kind of like a fly on the wall in a Zoom meeting, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Essentially, our business is all about trying to help people make more sense of what happens when they're on virtual conferences. So whether that's in an audio only mode, or you have the benefit of video, so much is lost in the signal, right? You're not in front of the person, you don't pick up on all the same cues, you don't see their body language in the same way. It's a flat sort of affect environment in which you're trying to still carry out the same interpersonal communications and interpersonal work that you do every single day. So what we do is we listen in on the vocal stream of a video conference. And then increasingly, we're also picking up on the nonverbal part of video conferences. And then we give feedback to the members in real time, so they can see where dominance and engagement and energy is happening in the meeting, and then adjust accordingly.
Okay, you've said so many things that I've got to try to follow up with. Like, okay. I'm like, wait, how do you do that? So literally, you're listening and you can hear everybody who's talking. Mm-hmm. And now I feel guilty because I just interrupted you. Are you able to tell if somebody interrupts them?
Yes. Yes, we have a specific metric around interruption. We have another metric around affirmation.
Okay, now I feel really guilty. Like, okay, no, sorry. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it can. One of the things that's really important to note is that these are not always a priori good or bad. So we're not a judgment meter. This is not you had a great meeting or a bad meeting, or that was a good behavior or a bad behavior. What we're really trying to do is surface things that can be noticed, but lots of people don't or don't have the energy to notice when they're having a meeting in real time. So if I am not paying complete attention to you, Darren, and I'm watching Jeff's body language and demeanor while I'm on a video, I might miss a cue that's happening from you. Right? So we pick up on all that and we synthesize it into metrics and give it back to people so they can kind of have a replay of what happened in the meeting. And everybody gets metrics. So it's not like I'm the overlord of the meeting and I just get to see everything. There's no, quote unquote God view. There's just, the meeting metrics and everybody gets a view of those. And if you were in the meeting, then you get the meeting metrics and you can find out what happened.
Beth, are you looking at the video as well as the audio?
Yeah, we are just introducing emotion sensing and gestural facial gestural tracking so that you can get both nonverbal and verbal cues from the meeting. It's not required because people can turn off their video, but we really encourage people to keep all of the sensory capabilities on so you can get as complete a picture of what's happening in the video.
Can you give people feedback like you're using a really tacky background image there?
we're not focused on anything like that. We're just looking at the facial signaling, because it's so much of, you know, what you you say with words and what you say with your face sometimes match and sometimes don't match.
So you talk about real time. If I'm interrupting someone, am I going to get a little notification saying, hey, you're interrupting too much? Or if I'm not talking, am I going to get a notification saying, hey, say something a little bit more? Or how does that real-time notification work?
Yeah, we have a much more subtle way of doing it than that. There is an actual shared view of the dominance pattern of the meeting on screen for all people at all times. You can turn it off, but we encourage people to keep it on because it shows there's a sort of a purple ball in the middle that you're trying to keep in the middle because that indicates a balanced conversation. But if the ball starts to move toward you, then it shows that you're basically hogging the mic. And then if the, you know, if the ball starts to go toward others, then it's showing that the, you know, the conversation is moving toward that speaker. But the trick is to kind of keep that ball in the middle to keep a balanced conversation. All people have a chance to participate. There is even flow. There is a, you know, balanced dialogue, and that's where the most successful engagements typically sit online.
Now, I know the name of the company is Riff, and I'm guessing that's from musicians who come together and riff together. And like the other day, my son, he's in a band and does the music for the podcast. And so he was making a bunch of noise in the basement. I come down and I'm like, what are you doing down here? Like, it's like, sounds horrible. He's like, we're riffing, Dad. We're riffing. Like, maybe you call it riffing. I call it not being able to get any work done. That's what I call it. So the idea of riffing is what? Explain that. Is everybody working together?
Yeah, I think the thing that we wanted to convey with the name and where it came from is that musicians are often picking, especially riffing musicians, right? Ones that aren't just playing from the script of a preordained piece, but are actually trying to respond to one another in real time and make new music. They're picking up on the cues of the other members of the band, right? If I'm the person who's picking up the solo, right? I'm the drummer or the guitarist or one of the other members of the band. I am taking a cue from another member of the band and I'm extending it, right? And moving with it into the next sort of interpretation of that initial movement of music. And that's really, when you think about how groups work together and when they're in synchrony like that, a lot of it is about picking up on cues of the other members and then being able to feel like you're in a real flow with those other people and that you can work together effectively and well.
I never really thought of meetings as being an art form, but it sounds like it could be.
Well, think about a meeting you've been in recently, Jeff, that was great. I know. We don't think of meetings as having great as a qualifier, but think about ones that have gone really well and they felt like I was able to, it was successful. The people that I was in the meeting with had a real purpose for, I felt I had a real purpose for being there. We accomplished the work of the meeting. And then you walked away and said, that was a half an hour or 45 minutes well spent. And then think of others that have not gone like that. And you can know, like, you can at least start to qualify the differences between those. We're trying to give people feedback in real time to affect change in a meeting while it's happening, rather than going back and saying, oh God, that was the worst meeting. I hope we never have another one of those, right? But give people data to adjust as they're in meetings together.
When you're talking about that horrible meeting, you were talking about the one where everybody left on me, right? Where that's everybody exactly just got up it. And walked away. Yeah, that's the one where we're like, okay, this is not a good meeting for me, just so no. You know. What's the reaction? How do people like, because now all I can think of is that purple ball and where that purple ball would be anytime I'm having a meeting and where it's shifting. Do people like that, or are people self-conscious of that? Are they scared of the purple ball?
Yeah, I don't think they're scared of the purple ball. I think that they realize pretty quickly that it's actually peripheral. Like, you sense it right away and you see it. And some people are like, oh, I was fixated on it for the first couple of minutes of the meeting because I was worried about it. But then we just met and it was more naturalistic and we were in the flow of our meeting and I didn't care anymore. So there's some peripherality to it. We don't want it to be something that feels like it's an impediment to meeting. It's like a little gentle reminder. And that's one of the reasons why we don't give pop up reminders and say, oh, you're interrupting, or oh, you better speak up, or oh, you talk too much. You know, that stuff is super distracting. So we believe that we've got a, you know, mechanism that isn't going to overly detract from the meeting.
So is this, I'm guessing that this is something that's going to become more and more in demand with Zoom becoming so prevalent, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And what I'll say about that is, yes, and, which is, people are going to want to know if they're going to have to spend time in video conference. Let's just take that as a predicate, right? People are not going to go back to working all day, every day in an office, probably in a lot of industries anymore. And so it's going to be more of this. If we're going to be in a mode of being on video all the time, then we should learn something from the interaction while we're there. And that's our feeling on the matter, is that it's, you don't have to change the way that you interact, but you should learn more from the interaction if you're going to be there. And that data is harnessable. It's actually easier to collect data on video interactions than it is in in-person interactions. In-person's hard. We've done it. We used to have people wear a thing on their bodies that had a mic and a proximity detector in it, and we would measure how people circulated in space. It's really hard to do. This is much easier.
Yeah, because as you were talking about that, I thought, hey, I wonder if you could see, take the same technology and then do it in a real life meeting. But actually, you tried it in the real life meeting. And because I kept thinking, how would you do that? How would you have some video recorder? Would you have audio? And that? And then how would people, you wouldn't be able to see the purple ball and where the ball is going. So this actually makes it much better to have productive, worthwhile meetings.
And, you know, we used to have, it's interesting that you take up, you immediately went to the purple ball and the what we call the meeting mediator. We used to have people wear the badges. We did the verbal relay stuff, and we didn't do any of the facial gestural, obviously. But we would have a cell phone, like a really old Android cell phone with the little meeting mediator on the desk in the middle of the table. And that was our sort of, you know, hacked up way that we would give that feedback in real time. But, you know, it was definitely kind of a hack, and it was there just to learn and not necessarily a production, you know.
No, Beth, I got an idea, because I'm like totally into games. I like family games and competing games. Imagine if you had this phone and you say go, and then everybody starts talking, just trying to get the purple ball to get towards them. The more you talk, the more the purple ball. This could be the new family game. You got to turn this into something.
Yeah, but it would make a horrible family meeting.
It would be a bad meeting. That's true. It's funny that you say that it's a game, because of the first few times that we would talk with people about this very novel technology, they had no idea what we were talking about. And half the stuff we were talking about was social science and how people interact and all this, you know, deep research stuff, which is what our background is. And they're like, oh, look, the ball's next to me. I'm winning the meeting. No, you're definitely not winning the meeting right now. So definitely there's this, there can be this sort of fun tension, right? Where you are calling out the state of the meeting mediator as a way to bring people back to balance. I don't think that's a completely inappropriate tactic, because for some people, it's really uncomfortable to say something to somebody who's hogging. They really don't want to call out their colleagues, but this is a way to notice without having to be the person who is the police dog, you know, who calls people out or rats people out in meetings. It's right there. Everybody can see it. They know what's happening.
Yeah. Did you notice the purple ball? I hope you saw that. Didn't mean to call attention, but the ball's on you, just so you know. That sounded, almost sounded like a Trump accent. That was not any attention.
I think you're pointing out something that's very hard for people, which is to call out their colleagues. It's really hard. They don't want to do it because it's uncomfortable.
So Beth, if you could, if we have this genie in a box, okay, and we're going to open the box and you get any wish that you want, you rub the box and the genie pops out and you can have any wish you want for speech voice technology coming your way, what would you wish for? Does anything pop out in your mind?
Yeah, I have one wish. It's really hard to do. Ooh. I would like a sarcasm detector. Sarcasm is one of those things that's really hard for a machine to detect, but really easy for humans to detect. It's very contextual, and it's about how it's about tone, but it's also about the words you use, and it's the context of the words, you know, relative to other words that have been spoken at the same time. So it's this really interesting construct of the actual words, the sentiment of the words, the tone, the delivery, the intonation that that person typically carries off. So there's, it's really hard. It's subtle. It's a human, you know, brain detection thing that's really hard to replicate with a machine.
And it would be really good to incorporate that into your offering, because sarcasm is one of the most toxic things in any meeting.
Can be very toxic. That's right. And it can be okay. Like in, let's go back to your family context. You know, we actually have people using Riff with their families. And I said, oh, very revealing to the dynamic of our family. But sarcasm can be lighthearted. It can be a part of a banter. It can be done with care and with caring, but a lot of times it's not. And it really is divisive and unproductive. And, you know, so detecting it is really artful. And that's something I'd love to be able to do with speech.
Wow. Good luck with that one. Yeah, that's good.
Thank you.
that'll be a chore.
Beth, you mentioned your academic background here. Can you say anything about you know, where this is coming from? Like what did you do to get into this in the first place?
My background's actually in teaching and learning. I had studied mathematics and then mathematics and science teaching and learning in college. And one of the things that I was really struck by when I first started as an instructor was that everything that I understood about learning and the human construct that learning is, which is typically it's an exchange, right? I learn something from you. You learn something from me. We learn together. Learning is a social exercise. It was like totally out of the curriculum. There was no collaborative learning of any kind. There was no peer-based learning. There was no constructive learning. It was all just, you have a book, you learn from it, your teacher tells you things, you write them down, you try to reconstruct them later. Such an individualized exercise. And I didn't care for that. I didn't think it was a genuine reflection of how humans behave. Fast forward many years, and I met a group of social scientists working on something called collaborative intelligence or collective intelligence. And they were really coming at it from a social science and organizational theory point of view. Like, yeah, we learn together. This is how modern workplaces work. You don't just toil away in obscurity in your office. You have people that you rely upon, and they're, you know, you have a whole network of connected individuals who are part of your knowledge network, right? That's how you work and how you do constructive work in a workplace. So we realized we were kind of looking at the same problem through slightly different lenses. We started working together. I brought my pedagogical and learning sciences context. They brought their social science and computational physics, social science and social physics context. And we kind of came up with this product together.
It's fascinating, Beth. I love where you're going with the whole thing. And I'm especially looking forward to you changing my Zoom meeting so people don't get up and walk away. And I'm getting a little nervous the longer this goes on, because I have this fear that either you or Jeff just going to walk up and disappear from the screen.
I'm out.
See, I know. She's leaving. She's leaving. Son, the purple ball is shifting. Okay. That's a sign we got to wrap this up. Beth, thank you so much for sharing with us all the stuff you're doing, and good luck with changing the future of Zoom meetings.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your questions and being here with you both today.
Beth, it's been great to talk to you. Take care.
So Jeff, I'm very intrigued by this whole concept of software eavesdropping on Zoom meetings and telling people, hey, talk more, don't interrupt more, all that kind of stuff. What are your thoughts on that? How difficult is that going to be to get that really to the point where it's like something everybody's doing amazing stuff with it?
You know, it's funny. The last year has made me have to change some of what I say about transcribing meetings. Transcribing meetings has been, in my mind, the holy grail of speech recognition. It's like the hardest thing to do because you've got a lot of people. They're talking over each other. The way people usually describe it is, imagine you're sitting around a room and you have a microphone or maybe someone's cell phone in the middle of the table. And at the end of the meeting, you want a transcript that says, okay, you know, Darren said this, then Jeff said that, and then John said this, and then Beth said that.
Wait, I know Darren, Jeff, and Beth. Who's John? It was John, I didn't know about. Was he
John? John didn't show up for a call today, but he's...
Oh, Okay. I thought maybe he was really quiet, sitting in the corner. I didn't know anything. Keep going.
And then people want to know, what did we decide to do? What were the action items? You know, Darren agreed to throw a party for the company, and Jeff agreed to whatever. So we
just so you know, I'm not. I don't keep interrupting. I'm not throwing any party for the company. So okay, keep going.
Invited people. This meeting transcription idea has always been one of the hardest things to do because, like I say, you've got many speakers, noisy environment, people interrupting each other. There's a big difference when you know you're being recognized by a computer, like when you're talking to Siri or someone, you speak differently. And in a meeting, you don't speak like that. You're trying to dominate, like Beth was talking about, or maybe not dominate or whatever. If you got the purple ball following you around.
By the way, can I just say, mom is classic as that when she's talking on her phone. Siri, can you tell me where the newspaper is? I mean, it's like super enunciating and being super clear about it. And so I picked up the same thing, and I'll do something like that. And all my kids like, you're talking just like grandma. You talk to the phone just like grandma's talking to the phone. Okay, keep going.
Good. Well, I'm sure Siri or Alexa or anyone else appreciates you for that. But anyway, there's with the rise of Zoom and over the last year or so during the pandemic, that has really redefined what meetings are like. And now in a Zoom call, you've got people on different channels so that even if they do talk over each other, you've got the channels separated out. And in a Zoom call, people tend to speak a little more regulated. They aren't quite as obnoxious as they are in a room sitting around a table
talking over each other and interrupting and just sort of having, because you can read people's body language and all that stuff, and in a Zoom meeting all you can't as much. Okay, keep going.
Yeah. So it turns out that it's easier to transcribe Zoom calls than a Zoom meeting than a sit around the table meeting. And also, everybody's got their own microphone. You're not like, everybody converging on one microphone in the middle of the table.
And technically, we would be able to separate those out. Like, here's this audio signal coming in here.
Yeah.
And if you needed to, you could separate those, this person and all that. So it would be a little more possible.
Yeah, that's right. So the idea is that Zoom meetings or video meetings, I don't mean to only talk about Zoom. There's lots of other video meeting platforms, but they're all... they're all easier to transcribe than the traditional meeting sitting around a table. And that's been good for the industry. And it's allowed Beth and Riff Analytics to take on this problem in a way that would have been much more challenging in the past.
So there's hope. And I think it's sort of cool. I'm sort of excited. As long as that purple ball doesn't show that I'm dominating and taking too much of, if it's being drawn toward me. And then quickly, give me your idea on the sarcastic meter, on the being able to recognize sarcasm. Because like sometimes I'll come home and like maybe I haven't really cleaned the kitchen too well. And my wife says like, oh, thanks for cleaning the kitchen. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, you're welcome. She's like, no, thanks for cleaning the kitchen. Like, oh, well, you're welcome. Yeah, like, no, I'm like, oh, see, that's when I need the sarcasm meter in there, because like, she's not really being serious. She's not really thanking me. She's actually the exact opposite of that.
Right, so sarcasm is really, really hard to detect. All of us, have a hard time dealing with an understanding sarcasm, but sometimes it's more obvious than others. Sometimes, in a meeting, if someone says, yeah, right, something simple like that in the right context, and listening to the tone of how it's falling and so forth, you can train a sarcasm detector. You know, the old joke, the grammar teacher is telling the students, if you say,
I ain't got no money.
Yeah, she says that means it's two negatives make a positive. But she says it is not the case that two positives make a negative. And the student pipes up and says, yeah, right. Training a sarcasm detector is possible, but there are limits to what it can recognize. It can recognize some obvious examples. But in order to get it right, like in your case, walking home, and your wife saying, oh, thanks for cleaning the kitchen. In order for me to recognize that that's sarcasm, I would have to know that the kitchen was in an unclean state, you know, that you hadn't really cleaned it. Otherwise, I might, you know, if I just heard that, if I just heard a recording of that, I might think, oh, yeah, well, Darren did a good job. He cleaned the kitchen.
Well, here's the clue for you right there. If I'm home by myself, I did not clean the kitchen, and the kitchen will always be in a state of disrepair. I'm just telling you right that. So tell your little sarcasm reader monitor to take that into account.
Well, we'll see,
you promised Beth.
We might be able to learn that. We might be able to learn, you know, anytime Darren opens his mouth, it's probably sarcasm.
Probably. You promised Beth you'd be able to do it. So just factor in like, okay, anytime Darren, 100%, that will be sarcasm. By the way, do you hear that, by the way? I hear some music. Is that riffing music? It's just the theme music playing, which means it's time for us to wrap this baby up and put a bow on it. Thanks everybody for joining us. I'm Darren.
I'm Jeff. We'll talk to you next time.